I remember being a little girl and having feelings that were too big for my body. I just was such a caring, loving, supportive, wanted to save everyone and everything little kid, right? And I was always the person who would find the individual who didn't have someone to sit with at lunch and make sure that they were included. I cared very deeply about remembering birthdays or important events that happened for people. Like, I just always have been two things: one, crazy empathic, and two, really detail-oriented. I'm like this hawk that just zones in on things and is so like clear and particular and just wants people's experience to be so good, right?
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here having fun before we even started with Erin Halligan Avery. Erin, what's up? How are you?
Good, good, good. Nice to be here today. Thanks for having me.
You know what I just realized, and I should have said it before we clicked play?
What's that?
Didn't you just have a birthday? Happy birthday.
Yesterday. Yes. Thank you.
So this will come out in like 30 to 60 days, but I still consider you the birthday girl for this episode.
Thank you.
Erin is the president and founder of Concern Center, Inc. And I'll pass the torch over to you. Wow, we just did a torch analogy before we jumped on here, but I'm going to pass the torch over to you to introduce us to what is Concern Center, Inc.? What exactly do you do? Why do you do it? You tell me.
Awesome. Yeah. So Concern Center, Inc. actually started during my time as a case manager at one of the local institutions here in Rochester. And I was very overwhelmed. I had about 141% increase in the number of concern referrals I was receiving in any one given semester, and yet was the only person still doing my job. And I needed a better way to help the students I was meeting with, or help their parents, or help faculty and staff get connected to resources without them literally having to meet with me specifically. And so I thought, well, when people meet with me, they always know what they're struggling with. They always know what their concern is. They just don't always know where on campus or off campus they should go to get help. So I said, why can't we just reverse the help-seeking process and create a platform that allows people to literally just type in or select their concern? Something like, I'm having trouble making friends, or I don't have any more money on my meal plan, or I haven't been to class in 2.5 months and I really need to drop this class, or I need to maybe take a leave of absence. So if they know their concern, why can't they just type that in and then receive a list of resources that are available to help support that concern? So in many ways, that sort of became a secondary version of me, just not an in-person version of me. And that helped me get through some of this mass explosion of people who were struggling and needed help and just needed to know where they went to get support. I honestly thought at that time that that was it. I'm like, cool, we created this thing. It's going to be used at this institution. And then phone calls started coming in from other institutions and other people saying, that is so cool. Where did you get that? You know, can you share that with us? That was in 2014, 14 that some of that started. And I put it all on the back burner and I went on with my career and I did other things and I thought about it from here and there. And it wasn't really until 2018 that I took it off the shelf and I said, this is something. This is actually something that is going to help people and that we can make into a business and that we can fine tune for good intentioned organizations. And so from 2018 until now, as of today, full-time working with Concern Center with the most amazing team on the planet, we have developed it into a fully customized resource directory that helps good-intentioned organizations to help their people get connected to resources they need simply by indicating what it is that they're concerned about.
Love it. Well, what I love about this is I feel like you're overwhelmed and there's obviously a need because there's all these influx of inquiries. People need help. You're overwhelmed and your first thoughts probably, how do I reduce my overwhelm? But honestly, like a lot of people I know personally, especially when I was younger, I didn't want to walk in the door and talk to someone about something that had really been bothering me, especially if it was personal. Mm-hmm. And this allows the client, the user, the student to go and do research on their own and kind of skip the middleman, which was you. So yes, it gives you more time, but it gives them more security and time as well, right?
Absolutely. Right. So if the problem here is just that people don't know where they're supposed to go, we don't need to have that extra roadblock of you have to meet with a human being to get that answer, right? People can help themselves to information when that information is readily available and in a user-friendly format. And that's what Concern Center did. That's what changed. That's why Concern Center is different. Because if you go to any organization search bar in their website and type in a concern, you are not going to get a list of resources. You might get some journal articles. You might get some one-off links. You might get a connection to someone who may or may not know something about that particular concern. But I really realized much later on, actually, in this business process, that the problem is that we are not making resources and information accessible to a user in a way that they can help themselves to the information. Mm-hmm. We're just inadvertently, I don't think it's intentional, creating roadblocks, making it more difficult. We're putting extra people, extra space, extra time in between that person just getting connected to the right place the first time or without a lot of the runaround.
I like that. You said you don't think it's intentional. Why do you think it is, though? Was the technology and was this the system just lagging behind a little bit? Because it seems like, yeah, it seems reasonably something that everyone should have access to, but possibly they didn't at one point. Why do you think that is? Was it just kind of a lag in the technology or?
Yeah, such a great question. This blows my mind. And the example I always give is the lint roller. Like someone had to create the lint roller, right? It's like some tape on a stick to get some lint off their clothes. Yeah. And everyone now they think of the lint roller and they're like, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. You put the sticky side on your clothes and you get the lint off, right? But someone had to create that. Someone had to like really question how people were getting lint off of their clothes before this happened, right? Same thing is true about Concern Center. To this day, a majority of organizations just are not thinking about customer service and how people access information from the user perspective. They think of it from the organization or what we call the business-focused perspective. Because if you're in higher ed, you are in that culture of higher ed and you know those offices, those departments, those people. But we forget that the first generation college student or their parents or a first year student or even a transfer student don't have access to that same level of information. You almost have to be part of the in-group in order to understand these things, right? And what that creates is an inequitable system because we don't all have access to that same information or those same people or knowing this person who knows this person who can connect me to this resource. But think of that in every organization. Think of it at a place of employment. It may be the case that you've never had to take FMLA before. Well, who do you go to for that, right? It may be the case that you need to take time off and you don't have enough sick time, and that's never happened to you before. Who do you contact? Is there a bank where you can go, like a sick time bank? Do you contact HR, right? So we don't know what we don't know. And I'm totally fine with that. The struggle is that our organizations haven't been thinking about what is the user's experience? How do they access information in a way that then turns this into a really usable, user-friendly system? And that, to me, is not only what makes Concern Center different, but it's also a challenge of Concern Center, because we are essentially changing the way people philosophically think about resource allocation and support at the same time we're trying to sell them our software to say, we do this better, let us help you get there. And that's challenging at times.
I can imagine. I mean, the supports needed, to me, it's a disaster scenario that this guy knows that gal that knows this gal that has a couple introductions that could get me into the resource. Like, I'm going to quit before I get there.
Right.
Or it reminds me of certain job scenarios, God forbid anyone who might be in this, but in order to get to a certain level, you need training from a certain person, but that person won't give you the training.
Right. Right. And so then you're what? You're just stuck in the water. You're like, okay, I just have to wait. what do I do in the meantime? Right.
And an example like that's like career development. Now imagine if you had a concern and you couldn't get a way to speak to HR and you didn't have the resources. So talk a little about, it seems like user experience and like having the resource at your fingertip rather than playing he said, she said, try to figure out the answer. Tell us a little bit more about that, like user experience and how it actually works. Like, I can pick up my phone. Let's give a concrete example.
Okay.
So we can kind of see it in action.
Absolutely. So what we say is that we work with good intentioned organizations. Those can be people like institutions of higher ed, nonprofits, K-12 school districts, government agencies, veteran organizations, employers who care about their employees, right? When we say good intentioned organizations, we mean people who have the best intentions for their users. They just don't always have the best way of presenting that information. So we take all of the resources that they commonly refer out to anyone who's struggling with any type of concern, and we pair those resources with common concerns that are experienced by members of that group. If it's at an institution of higher ed, then it is a college student or their parent and their primary concerns. If it's a K-12 school district, it's usually the parents or some of the older, ninth grade and up students. We will run focus groups with them and find out what are the things most concerning or most troublesome to that group of people. So by pairing the concern that organization knows because they know this group of students or people incredibly well with the resources that can support them, that's what sort of reverse engineers the help-seeking process. So as an example, I might be a college student, and I know that my institution's version of Concern Center is my one-stop shop. It is where I go. It's my central hub. If I don't know where to go for something, then I will just go to whatever my Concern Center platform is. It's been marketed to me. They've talked about it at new student orientation. They've talked about it. They've put the QR codes all over campus. You know, it's marketed everywhere. So I'm like, wow, I'm really struggling. I want to drop a class, but I'm not sure which office I'm supposed to go to. Do I talk to my advisor? Should I talk to my professor? What is the drop date, right? I have all these questions about it. I literally go to my campus's version of Concern Center and I type in, want to drop a class. I press submit. And from that place, a list of different resource options will show up. Maybe the first one is the College Center for Advising Services. Maybe the next one is a particular person that you go to in advising services to talk to, right? And so any of those resources that have already been pre-identified to help someone with that concern will populate. And the student or their parent or whomever is looking for it can then click on those resources and get any and all information you can possibly imagine, from email address to phone number to GPS coordinates to hours of operation, a description, a photo, all of those things about that particular office.
It's the resource, and it goes back to the phone thing. So whether I'm on a desktop or a phone, I can easily access it. It doesn't replace the in-person or one-to-one help that I might require, it sounds like. But at least I don't have to worry about asking around, or even worse, not knowing how or where to ask to get that help that I might need.
And so I'm a mental health provider by training. I have a PhD in mental health counseling and supervision from the University of Rochester. So I've worked with and met with quite a few clients during my time. And what I can tell you is a consistent is that people do not always have the same desire for finding a resource. Some people don't always want to meet with a person. Some people don't want to read an article. Some people want an app. Some people want to watch a self-help video, right? Concern Center's main premise is, no matter what your choice is for a resource, you should have easy, efficient, and equitable access to that resource and be able to decide for yourself what your point of entry will be. Our goal is that if you watch the self-help video, that might then lead you to download the app. If you download the app, that might lead you to go to a group of other people who use the same type of app. Let's say like the Calm app, right? After you're in that group, you then find out that a lot of these people go to XYZ therapist on the outside. You get connected with the therapist, and maybe that's your inroads, right? Our goal is just one point of entry, because we believe that if you can just open the door for people in whatever way that they feel comfortable, that ultimately that can lead to change, to connection, to relationship building, to something that in some way betters that person's life. For us, it's not about here's the one path of entry, take it or leave it. And, you know, if you don't like it, then I guess you're out of luck. That's very far from our philosophy of what help looks like for people.
It's very much a choose your own adventure. There's not one point of entry. It's not like, hey, we're Mark. So Calm app's great, but it's not, hey, this is Calm app. This is the one way to gain mindfulness. It's no, this is a resource database to help you bridge some gaps and kind of choose your own adventure. But we're going to vet the information and present it to you just so you know that it's not hogwash, like bad stuff. But
to that point, can I add something on that?
So yeah, please.
I've had sometimes people say to me, so cool, I love this idea. What's the difference between you and Google? And I'm like, usually my first, you know, response is, well, our bank accounts are a little different, but
different name.
Right. So what's the difference between Concern Center and just a general search engine? And my response to that is, when you are using a search engine, such as Google, it's you in the World Wide Web. And you're going to type in any type of concern or any type of information you want. And then it's you and this vast amount of wonderful, beautiful, and sometimes terrible knowledge that is out there on the internet. What we do is that we place in between the World Wide Web and the user this, what we call a trusted advisor. And the trusted advisor is the institution of higher ed. It's the K-12 school district. It's the nonprofit, right? It is the group that that user already has a connection with or already trusts. And so when you talk about a vetted resource, or you talk about, okay, these are tried and true, it's because I already trust that trusted advisor, that they have my best interest at heart, because I have a connection with them, that I can then do this intermediary step between myself and the World Wide Web, where I can get my initial resource access. And then if I want to look at the World Wide Web for some additional information or extra videos or those kind of things, totally fine. But it's my one step in between me and this gigantic deep end. So the analogy I use is, if Google or a big search engine is an email, then Concern Center is a handwritten card. And that for me is the difference between what we are trying to do at Concern Center and what other information is out there and wonderful and available, but just not on as much of a personalized level.
A handwritten card. I know, yeah. I don't know when it happened, but I get 20 to 30 spam pitch emails a day. And based on your analogy, that's in essence someone who's paying to play. I do marketing. I know you can pay and you can come up on Google. It's not cheap, but you can come up first.
Sure. Yeah.
This is personalized based on institution, region, concern. Yeah. It's personalized by the trusted source for their clients. And you can't, you tell me, I feel like you can't really pay to play in that scenario. You need to be a vetted, trusted resource, or you're just not going to be on the app, I imagine. You're not going to be on the
website. Absolutely. So if you are a resource that is already trusted by that organization, then that would be the first way that you would get into the Concern Center platform, right? Again, vetted, approved. These are usually resources that aren't just picked out of the sky, but that are trusted by that organization. Yeah. The second way would be through what we call our virtual resource bank, or a VRB. And the virtual resource bank is new and being added in 2023, where we have vetted and approved, very strongly vetted and approved, over 100 different 24/7 available anywhere virtual resource options. And those resources are coming from Concern Center, but have the seal of approval from myself and a committee of really wonderful, diverse, excellent thought thinking providers in this field. About what does it look like to have an accessible resource? What does it look like to have an inclusive resource? What does, you know, all of these things go into our vetting process and our review process? One of the questions is, would you use this resource for yourself or for a close family member? And if the answer is no, it's out. Because if it's not good enough for you and your family, it's not good enough for the users of Concern Center. And so we now have a system where anyone can submit, any available 24/7 resource can submit to our VRB, but it will go through this really strict vetting and review process because we're putting our name on it, and resources matter. Quality of resources matter. Accessibility of resources matter. And so to your point, yes, it's one of those two ways, either by the trusted advisor themselves or through our own pretty stringent vetting process.
Let's illustrate that, because I love the concept of, would I use it myself, or even more powerful, like, would I recommend this to someone else? Like, if the answer is no, what's an illustration of a resource that comes to mind that there's, obviously don't disclose anything you can't disclose, but are there any certain resources that you're like, yes, like, not only is this something I would use and or maybe I do use, but I absolutely would recommend it to someone? What does a resource like that look like? Kind of getting granular on the vetting process and maybe like an example of what a resource like that looks like.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. We have had some conversations with NAMI Rochester and love them, love their mission, love their vision, love what they are doing. Some of the resources and the trainings and the webinars and the information that they provide is second to none. And so that would be an example of something. Maybe we would include one of their online webinars, or maybe they have groups that are available for anyone to come to, right? Another example would be the Jed Foundation puts out some really phenomenal white papers and information associated with suicide prevention and identification of people who are struggling before they reach the point of suicide. And so some of the resources put out by Jed are resources that I was using when I was in the field, and also that I would refer now people that I care very deeply about to some of those resources. There is a company, a healthcare company right now that specializes in women's health and women's health issues, and comes from the place of understanding that historically women and women's health issues have been underrepresented and not cared about to the same extent as some other people's healthcare needs. And so their specialization and sort of their business model, and they have a continuity of care model. That would be an example of a program that was submitted to us that we would review. We would seek out testimonials. We would talk to people who have, you know, said that they used this particular system. What was that like for you? So that's just part of our vetting process. And then if it worked out and we said, yes, this is great, and we liked the model, then we would then go in and associate those with the types of concerns that that particular resource could help or could support.
Love this. Before I get more granular, which I can, I don't want to do the listener a disservice and forget to talk a little bit more about Erin, because when we first met, part of the conversation was you're kind of like an accidental entrepreneur, like accidental lady boss, and it wasn't like an aspiration or like, so you weren't trying to be the next Sarah Blakely, and you didn't have like Oprah. Maybe you had Oprah on the wall, I don't know, but it happened accidentally.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get to know you a little bit better before we get too granular.
Cool. Yeah.
Get to know you on a personal level. What was the come up? Like, why were you into care and mental health in the first place? Let's start there. What got you into the field in the first place?
Gosh, I remember being a little girl and having feelings that were too big for my body. I just was such a caring, loving, supportive, wanted to save everyone and everything little kid, right? And I was always the person who would find the individual who didn't have someone to sit with at lunch and make sure that they were included. I cared very deeply about remembering birthdays or important events that happened for people. Like, I just always have been two things. One, crazy empathic, and two, really detail oriented. I'm like this hawk that just zones in on things and is so like clear and particular and just wants people's experience to be so good, right? And so it came time for me to choose where I was going to go for college. It was a no-brainer for me that psychology, the study of people, was exactly what I wanted to get into. I did that for my undergrad, and I went on for my master's degree, and I really went on for my master's in psychology. And I started to do that program, and I just found that it wasn't as connected enough to humans, to people, to that connectedness of people. And so I left the psychology master's program and went to the mental health counseling program. And it was absolutely there that I found this love and passion for working with people, hearing people's stories, making people feel seen and validated and understood. It was a group class. I was a graduate assistant for Dr. Celia Watt and Dr. Doug Scheit at SUNY Brockport. And it was my group interpersonal relationship class that I was assisting with that sealed the deal for me. Wow. That I will be doing something of this type for the rest of my life.
Why'd that seal the deal?
So Dr. Celia Watt is a mentor to me, continues to this day to be someone that I very much look up to. And it was because I saw in real time how you could sit with people and be honest and caring and compassionate and raw and in the most loving space of your life. And I never knew that that was possible. I actually thought that those two things were opposite, that the more honest, the more direct, the more, you know, in your face you could be about something, the less love and compassion was there. And it was in that space that I was like, this is who I am as a human being. I'm in this class. I'm in this group session. We're interpersonally relating with each other and saying things like, when you say those things, I notice I get really annoyed. And I don't know if that's about you or if it's about me, but I'm wondering if we can process that further. And I'm like, this is amazing. How are we in this space right now, this shared space of caring enough about each other that we can have these really personal, in-depth, and amazing conversations? And it was really that class. It was really that grad assistant experience. It was really me getting to know Dr. Watt and just seeing so much of myself and who she was that framed who I ultimately would be as a leader, how I would go on for more schooling, what I would do with the rest of my life, what I wouldn't do with the rest of my life. It was just a really pivotal and really important part of my journey.
Powerful. And we won't go through every single chapter, but what did happen next? So you felt this is pivotal. This is where I'm going to go. I understand this care and communication at a different level. That's when you decided to go and like pursue a doctorate.
Yeah. So I actually got into the res life field. So student affairs, I'll be completely honest that the thing that drew me to that position was that it came with free housing and a meal plan.
That sounds like a decision. Cool.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm nothing if not practical. Sometimes I'm like, remember speaking with one of my colleagues and being like, wow, that sounds like a pretty cool gig. You get free housing. You don't have to pay for housing. And at the time, I remember thinking, oh, I pay so much for my one bedroom apartment right now, right? This just sounds like a good idea. Mm-hmm. So I got into higher ed student affairs and I just fell into it. I really didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know higher ed student affairs was something, you know? And really then that started an 18-year journey of me being in res life. I then worked in disability support. I then started the care network at the University of Rochester, which sort of helped identify students of concern and get them connected. Just sort of like rolled down the hill from there with all of these helping wellness, student wellness roles that I was a part of. And sort of building my career in what I thought was going to be a forever life of student affairs and higher education.
And we thought was this is where the plot, and we joked about no Sarah Blakely on the wall. You weren't like in love with Elon Musk. You didn't think you were like, you
know,
when we met, you specifically said like, I don't feel like I'm an entrepreneur.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what the heck happened to make you go that route?
No, I know. You know, I'm thinking about my LinkedIn profile right now and my description says, it starts by saying something like, I'm pretty sure I'm the person that my high school class would have said least likely to become an entrepreneur someday, because again, I'm highly sensitive. I'm really empathic. I almost have like this intuitive sense that can be good or can be bad. I am crazy detail oriented. My best friends would tell you I'm very particular and like things a certain way. I also like to know what's coming next. All of these things I'm describing to you are exactly the opposite of what an entrepreneur experiences, right? I'm not usually spontaneous. I don't like being surprised by things. I don't like not knowing like what the next thing is that's going to happen. So if it was not for Concern Center and people reaching out and saying that they wanted this product, and if it wasn't for me getting really fed up working in systems where I felt like there was so much red tape and I couldn't make a difference and people wouldn't get out of their own ways, if those two things did not happen simultaneously, I never in a million years would think to myself, oh, I just can't wait to be an entrepreneur someday. That's really what my goal is. I I say to my team right now, enjoy the ride right now, guys, because we're all done. When this is over, when Concern Center's done, we're not starting any more businesses. We're not like doing this over again. If anyone comes to me with some crazy idea of how we could start this or do that, I'm going to just, you know, push my hand away. I'm going to just be like, we're not doing that, right? So it's the running joke that they always say to me, you say that, Erin, but the opportunity to present itself, if it meant helping people, and if you thought it was a good idea, and after you'd been through it this first time, you would probably jump on every opportunity you possibly could to keep making a difference in people's lives. And then I changed the topic because they're probably right. I just don't want to talk about it.
For what I'm sensing from you, though, is that one main thing. And I had a previous guest, we'll put it in the show notes, John Torrens, wrote a book about entrepreneurs and ADHD. And there's a lot of pros, there's a lot of cons. There's a million pros, but one of the major cons is that shiny object syndrome, that not seeing things through, not having the patience, not having the detail orientation, trying to do six things at once. Let's say you're trying to go to zero from zero to 100. Mm-hmm. If you're doing six things, you might get all six to 30. But not a single one of them gets to 60, 70, 80, 90, 100.
Interesting. Yeah.
So when you were describing all the things that didn't seem like an entrepreneur, and for what it's worth, like not being overly risk adverse and certain things like that, like most entrepreneurs have to be risk adverse. But mm-hmm. if you see successful business people, I feel like they need to be patient and they need to be passionate and they need to be detail oriented. And they need to want to see it through. And if they focus on too many things, like you're really good. So this is just me, friend to friend, my opinion. It seems like you're really good at seeing through the one main thing. So mm-hmm. if that one main thing were to, and it doesn't seem like there's any chance it would, but if it were to fail, mm-hmm. maybe you pick up a new one main thing. But you're not like the traditional serial entrepreneur that's doing six things at once. So that might be part of why you're successful.
It's successful, right?
Focus, you know, is good.
Yes. You said this best when we first met the first time. You said there's a difference between an entrepreneur and a business professional, someone who runs a business and someone who's an entrepreneur. And I remember saying to you at that time, tell me what is the difference, right? And we talked about that and ultimately landed on the entrepreneur. I think I just put a new phrase there right here on this show.
The entrepreneur. It's an altruistic entrepreneur. An entrepreneur.
I love it. Let's start using it. The hashtag. The entrepreneur is someone who is just this creative genius and excited about all things and wants to just change the world and see what sticks and put it out there and see what lands and, you know, mold it and create it and recreate it and throw it out when it doesn't work, right? And the business owner or the whatever we called it and that one time that we met before, that business person is solid and steady and committed and focused on the one thing and anything just very closely aligned with that one thing, right? Like I just talked about the VRB. That's not a whole new product. You know, it's not, I'm selling shoes over here and I'm selling Concern Center over here. It's like one little tiny half step up from where we're at. And so as long as it's in that sphere for myself, I'm all good all day. It's when people start to be like, what's the next company that you're going to run? And what other ideas do you have? I'm like, I would rather go to my sister-in-law's art therapy studio and just create and create and create, right? Fun little craft projects. That's my creative outlet. It is not the amount of effort and work and time and attention and sleepless nights that come with entrepreneurship.
Yeah. So when someone asks, what's the next big project? You're like, arts and crafts.
That's right. Yeah. I'm making a wreath.
And I'm
making
not
a wreath over here.
Oh, what are you sawing the reefs for? No, I'm just doing it for fun.
No, on my front door is what I'm doing for. Yeah.
So Concern Center is the one main thing. It's the focus. And let's go future bound for a little bit. Like if you could, I love the magic wand question. Like if you could just wave a magic wand and Concern Center would be blank, where would it be? What would it look like? Like where do you envision Concern Center going? And you just take it from there.
Yeah. If I had my way, Concern Center would be in every single business and organization and nonprofit and university and every one of those good intentioned organizations throughout the entire planet, the entire United States. Maybe we can start there, right? I just think that we have a better and more improved way of helping people get help. And when people get help, when they've made the courageous decision to ask for help and then they get it, people's lives change. It is literally that simple to just have someone say that they need help, to give them access to that thing, and then to see the ways in which their life is different than it was before they had access to that. And if my way of being able to impact people and impact the world is by just giving them the tiniest bit of hope that they can get connected to some relief quicker than they could have otherwise, I want to do that on a huge global scale.
I like this because they say like, if you want to impact 10, 10,000, 10 million, transform just one and then do that 10 million times.
Yep. I love that.
So you're starting with the one end user, but then you're globalizing it so it can help more and more.
Yes. And isn't that what, let's just take it out of Concern Center a minute. That's what mental health therapy was for me, right? I'm sitting there with my client. My client is telling me some of the most distressing, difficult things that are happening in their life. We spend 50 minutes together talking about it, working through it. They take one little nugget away from that session that then informs the next conversation they have that day or changes the relationship that they have with someone in a positive way, or that they keep holding on to it or thinking about it. And that 10 years down the line, it changes. It's that ripple effect scenario.
Yes.
And that is what I loved the most about my time working with clients was you cannot engage in that level of relationship building with another human being and both people not be changed at the end of it. For better or for worse, you are not the same person at the beginning of that 50 minutes that you are at the end of that 50 minutes. And if this gives people access to that video, that app, that person, whomever it is, whatever it is, to change the course of their life, I want to do that times 10 million.
You took the words out of my mouth with the ripple effect and you illustrated it incredibly. And that's exactly what you're doing with the mission. To step away from magic, there isn't a magic wand. I know like community and like conversations and meeting people and partnering is important in what you're trying to do. So talk about some of these tangible things you've been working on to reach that global level. What are some of the day-to-day things you're doing now and ultimately in 2023 to make this possible one day?
Yeah. So 2022 was a year of what I'll call relationship exploration. And that meant that any single lead that came up for us, any opportunity to talk with people, Zoom with people, go to an event, speak to people about a podcast, write a blog article, anything, we followed every single lead. That is probably why I ended 22 the most exhausted I've ever been in my life.
That's the entrepreneur life right there.
Right, the ultrapreneur life. Yeah. So, you know, I very much, we followed every lead. We spoke to tons of people. We had so many meetings. A lot of that groundwork had been set before because I'm a very relationship oriented person. And the people who work for Concern Center also come with their own beautiful Rolodex of awesome people because awesome people breed awesome people, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're connected to awesome people, you're your network of awesomeness just continues to grow and grow and grow. So I met with so many wonderful, amazing people. And some of those opportunities landed. Some of those opportunities fizzled. Some of those opportunities I had the biggest of high hopes for, and then they didn't work out. And one of my favorite connections that we made was at the NASPA conference in March of last year. My colleague Ryan and I were at that conference together, and I said to him, "I'm so hungry. Do you want to go get something for lunch?" And he, like the dedicated employee that he is, says, "No, I got to stay here. You never know who's going to stop by and who's going to come by the booth and who we need to talk to." I'm like, "That's great. I'm going to go get some Chipotle." Yeah.
Part of what I'm thinking is you never know who's going to be at the frozen yogurt shop either.
That's right. Right. That's why I'm going to use that next time. I'm going to say to him, "Time to take a break." So I went off, I went to go get our burrito bowls, and he stayed back at the booth, and I come back, I got both my hands full, right? I got my drinks, everything. And he says, "You're never going to guess who stopped by our booth." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "Someone from Amazon." And I said, "Amazon, like I just ordered this." I had just ordered this like handheld steamer to steam our, what do you call that? Little conference table thing, whatever, that little conference table cloth that you put on there. Cause it was a little wrinkly
to
for
steam
me.
It down. Okay.
So I'm like, "They deliver those things now? I just ordered that. Like they stop by and deliver it." He's like, "No, they didn't deliver your handheld steamer."
2 hour delivery.
I'm like, "Where are we? That's incredible." He said, "This amazing woman named Christy, she had the best glasses." She totally does. They're like bright red. She's amazing. "She left me her business card, said that she was stopping by to look at our booth and like three other booths. She's about to go get on a plane. She wants you to follow up with her." And
no, we just froze.
So she has these amazing glasses, bright red. And Ryan says, "She stopped by. She has to speak to three companies. She's about to go get on a plane and she wants you to give her a call when you get back." I said, "Okay." When you say Amazon, you mean.
No, it's funny.
What?
That's exactly where you had froze the first time. You're like, she wants you to give her a call when she gets back. And then it froze. And I was like, "Oh my God." So now we continue the story.
Okay, perfect. So he says, "She wants you to give you a call when you get back." Now we're at this conference and I'm thinking all these people stop by, whatever. Okay. You know, we'll follow up with people, but of course I do. Cause again, I'm following every lead and I follow up and I talk to her and she is top 10 of my favorite people in the whole world. She is fun. She's engaged. She does not like red tape. She's previously been in higher ed. She is just a rock star. And she says, "You've built your solution on AWS." I said, "Yes." And she said, "We have a desperate need to have mental health companies or companies that are proactively identifying mental health support. I looked at your company. I would have purchased your solution immediately if I was still in higher ed. And I want to integrate you and get you on our Amazon partner network. And we are going to sell you wide and large and all over the place because we are so committed to what it is that you're doing." Wow. Still at this point, because I'm an ultrapreneur, not an extrapreneur, I'm thinking, "It's fine. She's just being nice. She probably says this to everyone," right? Fast forward over the last, it's coming up upon a year because in March we'll go back to NASPA again. And we are now included in Amazon's strategic plan for Q1, which will end at the end of March, where essentially they will be creating a one-stop shop centralized hub for institutions of higher education. And there will be five different platforms that are offered in that one-stop shop. I can't remember exactly all of the platforms. I think one is like a financial aid related package. And one of them is a software platform associated with donor relations or something, right? And our platform, Concern Center, is going to be one of the five platforms that they are offering as a part of this one-stop shop to institutions of higher education all over the United States. And they are identifying us as their primary mental health-focused solution for Amazon in the field of higher ed. That has then opened up opportunities for us with a company called Carisoft, which is government-focused or government agencies, the healthcare industries, nonprofits, these other organizations in these spaces that we have always wanted to be in, that we can finally create some of the impact that we've been looking to create. Also, right now with Amazon, we have started having some conversations about integrations with Alexa, which is hands down the coolest thing that has ever happened to me in my whole life. So my senior developer and our CEO and these other people, we get together and we essentially create the script of what it would sound like if a user were to connect with Concern Center via the Alexa platform. Mm-hmm. So let's say you were to say something like, Alexa, connect me with so-and-so organization's Concern Center. And sweet little Alexa would say, of course, what is it you're struggling with today, right? And then you can tell her what you're struggling with, and then she will connect you to resources and she can text them to you. And just the sky is the limit about some of the work that we're doing with this right now. And now I want you to imagine that in senior living centers, in hospitals, in institutions of higher education, in K-12 classrooms, right? In people's homes. There's just these really amazing opportunities that are coming up for us in 2023 that, one, blow my mind, and two, make me so happy to be a part of this organization, to be leading change in this space, and to have an opportunity to make an impact at this level. It is nothing shy of a dream come true.
It is a dream come true. It's so powerful because I'm going back to what we said before about vetting, where it's not, Alexa, I have a concern. Here's a blurb from Wikipedia.
Yeah, right.
She's going to be utilizing the vetted resource so she can provide the right information to the person in need.
Absolutely. And she's going to say to you, there's 34 resources and I don't want to overwhelm you. So what type of resource would be most beneficial? Is it a crisis text line, an article, an app, right? And so we will be getting this information in the hands of people in a way that makes sense to them, that they want to use, that they feel comfortable about. To your point you said at the beginning, maybe not by talking to a human being initially, but by talking to Alexa and getting connected. And then that connection is where we just start to take off and see change and transform lives.
Yeah, that one small it's silly talking about like that one small conversation with Alexa is that first ripple that leads to so much more beyond that first, hey, Alexa, I need something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's such a cool experience when you're creating like scripts for Alexa.
Oh, yeah.
They're saying to me, Aaron, what would you say if you were just you in this situation, right? And that becomes the script. If you were talking to me, what would I say to you? Thanks for sharing that with me. You know, I want to be most helpful for you. Something even as small as if that resource doesn't work out for you, come back. I'll give you another one, right? This isn't a dead end. It doesn't stop here. If that didn't work for you, let's try again. You know, that's what I say in my therapeutic office. That's what I say when people are struggling. And that can be how we can impact those 10 million people through the use of this really cool new method and mechanisms for getting people support.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So before we go rapid fire to close out, because I know we're both strapped on time, but I want to make time for the rapid fire.
Love it.
Tell us how I want to watch the journey. I want to support you in any way I can. How do I and the listener jump on board and learn more, utilize the platform? Tell us what the next move needs to be.
Perfect. So first and foremost, we have our website, concerncenter.com. We have a media hub on there. We have demos of our platforms. You can request a price quote. You can watch a new video I just produced. At the end of last year. So our website is a great landing spot. We use a couple different social media platforms. I would say that my favorites would be our LinkedIn page, which is just /Concern Center, and then our Facebook page, which would be at Concern Center Inc. So if you follow us, if you like us, if you share us, that helps us tremendously because that helps us get the word out to people. You can watch our journey on there. I think we share some pretty cool stuff, some pretty interesting stuff. We do this really cool thing during Mental Health Action Day, which essentially is asking people to fill out a form to tell us what they do to actively support their mental health. And then we turn people's picture into these cool cartoon characters and then post it throughout the course of the day. Last year, we had over 50 different submissions that really actively talked about how people supported their mental health. So people can join us for that. I don't know. Of course, I think that what we do is pretty cool, but I would love it if the listeners would follow us, would follow me, and would just stay up to date with some of the stuff that we're doing and check out our website.
I love this. I feel like we're only on chapter 5 of a very long saga of what will be. And I'm honored to be even just a couple sentences in the whole storyline.
So yeah.
I'm going to stay tuned because I wish you the greatest success. And I'm going to follow and stay engaged. And honestly, if there's volunteer things, like stay up to date as best as I can. I encourage the listener to do that as well. And if you want to reach out to me first, you can, but feel free to reach out to Erin and her team. But then again, if you want to start with me, that's cool too. Rapid fire round. These are short, sweet, fun. Just to end on a high point, get to know you a little bit better, and then we'll take off.
I love it. Super exciting. I can't wait.
So coffee or tea?
Tea. Definitely tea. Hot tea, black tea.
And some people fill in the blank on some of these. You can do that. The next one's beer, beer or wine?
Wine, sweet wine. The sweeter, the better.
Cats, dogs, or fill in the blank?
Oh, definitely cats. All the cats, multiple cats. My husband hates cats. I want all the cats.
You mentioned an interest in arts and crafts. I'm curious, Concern Center aside, doing stuff that just fills you up and brings you joy, what are some of the activities we might find you doing on the weekend just to have fun and relax?
One thing I absolutely love to do is home decorating. And I love to do home decorating on a budget. So I will scour Facebook Marketplace. I will go to antique shops. I will find the best of the best sales. And then I will upcycle them into some really high quality, cool looking stuff. So going around to like garage sales or just thrift shops or those kind of things is 100% one of my favorite things to do. I love to go antiquing. Probably one of my biggest guilty pleasures is that I love to play Texas Hold'em poker.
Oh.
I absolutely love playing poker. I could probably sit for 10 hours at a time, not even get up to go to the bathroom and just look at my cards, fold them, look at my cards, maybe bet, maybe look at my cards. I absolutely love to play Texas Hold'em poker.
So do you fold more than you bet?
Oh, yes. Because I'm not the most confident of players. And so if I do not have like a really great hand, I'm not, again, this is risk averse, right? I'm like, ooh, that's not a for sure thing.
That's another sign that's a sign of a good player though.
Well, I appreciate that because I very rarely will walk out with less money than I started with, right? So I might sit there and only play 15 hands, but those 15 hands usually count. So
you're in it.
I don't know if that's really gambling or not, air quotes, but it's my own time to myself where I could just me, a glass of water, and my two cards.
I'm not here to judge you. My grandma plays Mahjong. They do like a five, They have like a $5 buy-in. They've been playing for years, and she's made several hundred dollars on $5 buy-in. So is that gambling, or I think she wins every time.
You call them girl bosses. She's a girl boss. Look at her.
So I love it. Let's do one more weird one.
Okay.
So the magic wand was waved and everything we talked about came true. They decide they want to create a feature film about the whole journey and the come up. In this film, made for Hollywood film, who plays you?
Oh, gosh. That's such a fun question. Who plays me? So, one of my all-time favorite people, I think, because I don't know her personally. Well, two things. I have two answers. One, people have previously told me that I look like Jodie Foster. So if we want just a look alike, then I would say she's probably the closest. I'm not sure that our personalities are directly aligned, though. So I would say, gosh, can I pick Sarah Bareilles?
You can pick anyone you want.
Okay. She's a phenomenal singer, but I also believe that she's done some like Broadway acting. I don't think she's ever like pushed out into the movie scene. So this might be her nice debut, but she just impresses me all the time. Nope, I have another answer. Here's my official
answer. Okay, final answer.
Final answer is Kathleen Zellner.
Why Kathleen Zellner?
She is, I think I got her name right. She is the lawyer who spends all of her time getting people who were wrongly convicted of crimes out of jail. And she is perfectly methodical and kind. And she is so just badass that I see her and I follow her and I see the things that she's doing. And I'm like, she is such a perfect combination between knowing how to get things done and doing it in like the most thorough way possible, but also doing it with a smile on her face. Final answer, Kathleen Zellner.
So we let the energy out there into the ether somewhere. We'll see what happens. And even if that doesn't occur, I'm very confident you're going to kick some ass, and I appreciate you for coming on.
I love that. Thank you for being such a part of my journey. I have loved speaking with you. Every conversation we have, I just feel like I learned something. I feel connected. I so very much enjoy my conversations with you, and I'm really looking forward to what happens next and really hoping that we will stay in touch and be a part of each other's journey. Very much enjoying my time speaking with you. So thank you.
Thank you. And anyone listening, belated happy birthday. It's funny. This is coming out. I think it'll be February, March.
Cool.
It's currently January. So the happy birthdays will be belated. But if you reach out to me, reach out, let Aaron know you listen. Tell us one more time how we can keep in touch and what you're up to thus far.
Yeah. So follow us on Facebook, follow us on LinkedIn, follow me personally on LinkedIn. You can reach us at concerncenter.com. I would love to stay in touch. I'd love to hear from people. I'd love for you to follow our journey. The more supporters that we have, the better. We cannot do any of this alone. And we want to change lives and would love people's help in making that happen.
Aaron, thanks for taking the time to give us your message and your mission today. It's been fun.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.